What's the board's pleasure? You want to take a break, or you want to move on to item, delay nine for a bit, so we're going to move on to 10?
And we're still going to have a closed session to do?
Let's
just move.
And I will need to leave today at 1:10, so I don't want to be a quorum. I've got last code today, 1:30 in Martinez.
Yeah, I have a 1:30 as well, so.
So let's move. Let's just keep going.
Let's do 10. 10 is consider and take possible action regarding the next steps pertaining to callback pay erroneously reported as pensionable, which resulted in overpayments of benefits to retirees.
I don't want to jump ahead of staff, but I'm prepared to make a motion just for the purpose of discussion and in the interest of time to try to focus this, if that's acceptable.
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right.
He's prepared.
I'm going to move the recommendation, which is on page 2 of the memo, specifically 1, that we proceed with our fact-finding phase as to those members who requested a further opportunity to provide information about their pay, with the express proviso that we will proceed to move ahead and change and adjust the corrections for those members who did not provide a request for further hearing. I want that made clear so that there's no ambiguity on that. 2, that we would, in accordance with the recommendation, send a third written notice to the members who would have a further proceeding, which will outline the issues and types of information needed as more fully set forth in the memo. My motion would be to embrace the 30-day suggested period that was in the memo. And then items 3 and 4, as stated in the memo. That's my motion.
Second.
Rusty
been second.
Oh, that's right. Rusty already did. The blank motion.
Had a standing second.
Not to get too focused on a fine point here, but certainly I'm not voting on the motion, but I would support it if I were. But I'm wondering where the third written notice came from. I mean, we've now sent one notice. We've now sent a second notice. Presumably, many of those people didn't respond to the first or second notices because we're probably talking such a small amount of money involved. So I'm not sure where the third notice came from. I'm all for due process, but why not 4 or 5 or 6 notices?
Yeah, I interpreted it, Jerry, to be a specific notice with more concrete direction to the members requesting a further proceeding that would identify with maybe more specificity the types and kinds of information that could be presented.
But have we
as
not
opposed to a mass mailing kind of a notification?
But have we not already done that with the second notice?
This third notice is to request additional information that is needed to determine the pensionability. So it's not a notice that necessarily goes out to all 43, but just to the select group that they need additional information.
So I'm assuming it hasn't been done yet.
They're opposing the reduction. Yeah.
I hear you. It's more than an abundance of due process. I'll say this, that my motion would include, and hopefully the seconder will agree, that by including item 2, it's not intended to set a precedent for any future proceedings we might have that a third written notice is required. It's just that in this instance, I think based on the history to date, I think staff and council thought it important to include in a notice some additional information about the types and kinds of evidence that would be available to be presented that might bear on the pay question. So I'm embracing that for purposes of my motion. I think it's well beyond the due process required, but that's the motion.
I'm all for belt and suspenders approaches. I'm just not sure we needed to add a parachute as well.
I think this is actually giving them notice as to if they've requested a hearing, they're going to have to present evidence at the hearing. So this is notifying them of what type of evidence would be applicable or appropriate to be presented.
I appreciate Mr. Gordon's clarification.
So I'll second.
Thank you, Rusty.
Well, I thought you'd already done that.
Call for the question.
Just a suggestion.
We haven't had public comment. Harvey?
A suggestion on number 3. Rather than leaving open and yet having to send yet another notice about when the board may hear this issue, perhaps the board would like to schedule now, say in July or something, and get that notice out in advance. We're going through a period of vacations. Otherwise, we're going to get into June, tell Ben Pitts, try to set another hearing, and we'll get people who say, well, I can't make it then. Can I make it now? I think if we give at least 60 days notice now that if the board is going to hear this matter, it will be at the July 20-something meeting, and get that notice out with this third notice. Now, we can always adjust it, back away from it, depending on what evidence is submitted, but at least you put a marker out there that everybody can rely on and say, this is going to come down. If it comes down in front of the board, it's going to come down on X date.
But again, we haven't made that determination whether it's going to be presented initially to the board or
correct.
To some other fact finding.
Correct. So, just a thought.
Okay. Keep that in mind. Public comment, Dr. Tremaine?
Good morning. It's still morning, isn't it?
Barely.
Barely. I'll make this brief. So my name is Stephen Tremaine. I am the retired in December of 2009. I was appointed medical director of the hospital in 1987, of the clinics a few years after that, and of the whole county health department under Dr. Walker in 1999. So I've been in management position for the last 22 years of my career. PDOC, the Physicians and Dentists Organization of Contra Costa, I believe certified in 1990 or 1991, and because Dr. Walker and Mr. Godley were far too wise to ever go to a bargaining table meeting, they sent me. So I was personally present at every bargaining session held between Contra Costa County and PDOC, of course with representatives of county personnel, along with the hired negotiator, typically was Bruce Hyde. And I want to start my remarks with that because often it would be asked by the PDOC negotiators whether the callback pay was a pensionable benefit. And it was regularly and routinely confirmed by the county's representatives that it was pensionable. So I believe Dr. Heiner reported this to you at your February meeting, and I want to confirm from the other side of the bargaining table that it was a big concern of PDOC, and it was asked on more than one occasion, and it continued to be asked, and it was always reaffirmed that this was pensionable. And of course, as you well know, that pension contributions were taken from the callback pay. So I think that's just an important thing to get on the record. Second, I want to just describe very briefly the details that make the physician's work a little bit different. While yes, we are all licensed as physicians and surgeons, you may not have known that, but I'm not a surgeon, but my license in my pocket says I am, by the state of California. The county has one and only one pay classification or health personnel classification, which is exempt medical staff physician. Every physician, of course, comes with different skills. I don't think you just want to throw a dart when you have something wrong with you and pick anybody with a physician and surgeon's license in the state of California. So how does that all get managed? Even though the county, for its benefit, whatever, has only had one employee classification, we are managed by our bylaws, which are required by the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services of the Health and Human Services. They are required by the state of California, and they are reviewed and approved by the governing body of the hospital and health centers, which is our County Board of Supervisors. Those bylaws are required by all of these regulatory bodies to specifically define and delineate the privileges for each and every individual physician, even though they may all be exempt medical staff physicians. Those privileges are based on three factors. One is your training. The second is your lifetime experience. And third is your current clinical competence, typically the kinds of cases you've taken care of in the last couple of years. So you may have learned to do lots of thyroid surgeries in 1985, but if you haven't done any in a long time, you shouldn't be doing them. So each of these physicians has a specific and unique to themselves often list of the kind of cognitive problems that they can manage if presented to them by a patient and the kind of procedural issues that they can offer those patients. When a patient falls outside of one of those, then they are required to be referred to someone else. In addition, there's requirements that of certain departments of the medical staff, that those physicians be readily available to oversee the care of the residents, which provide a large portion of our inpatient care at the regional medical center. There are specific departments, not all of them, but for instance, the Department of Medicine, the Department of Surgery, OP, et cetera, they all have to have, by being a member of that department under the medical staff bylaws, they must be regularly and recurrently available after hours to both take phone calls and provide advice on patient care telephonically, or to actually come in and be present to assist residents with the care they're providing to their patients. So the important part of the care provided at the hospital is resident oversight and supervision. Part of the on-call and call-back responsibilities include coming in, not for necessarily emergencies. I think this is a very important point to make. A firefighter goes to an emergency, a hazmat worker may go to an emergency, but we may be called back on while on call in order to simply work with the residents and oversee their care. And in fact, it happens so often that it sure feels regularly and recurring to the rest of us. We have to plan our life around that, of course, and have to be regularly available. So it's not just running to an emergency. It is often as a part and parcel, and it's required. It's required that we be available to teach the residents and be present to care for them. It's one thing when you have a resident who you trust, who has lots of experience and who can succinctly articulate the patient's history and physical findings and laboratory work, and you can give them advice over the telephone. But often you need to, and you're most prudent to go in, evaluate the patient, take the history, examine them yourselves, and synthesize this case. Yes, sir.
A question, Doctor. Do you have any objection to the board holding individual proceedings to address the specific issues that are germane to each of the involved retirees?
No, in fact, I welcome that. But I think what I wanted to get out today was comments that are probably germane to almost everyone, and so give you a little bit of background information so that they may all choose to reiterate it on their own, I realize, when they have their hearing. But I think with just helpful background information, that it's a little bit different than maybe what you think about typically emergency responders.
Thank you. I just was...
No, I'm glad you asked the question. I frankly think that's the only way to do it, because while they may be covered under certain kinds of umbrellas, whatever contributed to their final pay year, or their FAS, as you call it, are going to be apples and oranges and apricots and everything else. They're going to be, if there's 15 objectors, there's going to be 15 different formulas how they got there. So I think that's the right way to do it, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Are there more questions? Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Doctor. Any other public comment at this time? There is a motion on the floor. Any other board comments? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Okay. What's the board's pleasure? Do we want to deal with the issue of who is going to preside over these hearings, or who's going to be the fact finder? Is it going to be the board? Is it going to be an administrative law judge? Is it going to be someone else? Or can maybe Harvey and Karen come back with a recommendation in the future with regards to the best way to deal with that? Personally, I don't really want to dedicate board time to 15 individual hearings. If we could get an outside arbiter to hear the facts, make a recommendation, and then present the back to the board, and then the board can deal with that.
If the board does choose to send this to a hearing officer, you're authorized to do so. What will happen is, similar to a disability process, what you get is a written opinion with a recommendation, and then that goes before the board with specific findings of fact and conclusions and a recommendation. And so that would be the process.
Much like disability.
Yeah. Do you have a preference as to how you think we might want to proceed?
This board has never utilized a hearing officer for non-disability matters. I think it's a good idea to explore that and see if that works. You may have a lot of factual hearings like this one coming up. You may want to explore this process and see how you feel with it.
So in that context, you'd have a hearing officer, you'd have a formal adjudicatory proceeding so that CICERA would have its staff and counsel, and the involved employee, retiree, would have their representatives as appropriate, legal or otherwise?
They can appear pro per or hire an attorney, correct.
Right. And then the issues would be vetted, tried, if you will, and then a decision reached, and then that's what would come to us, right?
A recommendation will be reached, and that recommendation will come to the board with specific findings of facts, and then the board will decide whether to accept the recommendation or do something different.
I sense that we've kind of got counsel slightly off guard here at this moment, and I guess not that you're not always prepared for any eventuality, but would it be inappropriate to ask for a recommendation, a formal recommendation at the next board meeting as to how we should proceed and what the pros and cons are? I understand we can do both or either, but it might be an opportune time to give them some additional chance to think about their recommendation.
I don't think we need any additional time.
Okay, then.
It's up to the board. We can go with a hearing officer or not. The hearing officer process will look like the disability process. It's a good idea because it allows everybody an opportunity to really shore up the facts and then have somebody neutral look at the facts, ask questions, and make recommendations, specific recommendations to the board.
I would say this is a situation where I would want the board to give specific instructions to the hearing officer as to what the scope of the hearing is to be. Is it entirely fact-finding? Is it fact and then applying the law to it and making a recommendation based on the ultimate question, or will that be reserved to the board, for example? My recommendation would be that if we use the OAH, the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is typically who does this kind of work, that it be a fact-finding, fact determination, and make a recommendation based upon a record of facts that are laid out before it, and that we reserve the legal issues for the board's determination based on the facts that are presented by the hearing officer.
And that will be my motion to it. In item 3 of the staff report and recommendation to move item C, which is further hearings before a hearing officer as authorized by Government Code Section 31533, with the express proviso that the direction to the hearing officer would be to conduct a fact-finding hearing, reserving legal issues to the determination of the board. Is that, have I summarized your thought correctly, Harvey?
I thought that was brilliant.
That's the motion.
Second.
Deborah, second. Any comment with regards to your motion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Second. Is that hearing?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. So were you just discussing the procedural aspects of an appeal now for the...
Yes, as far as the hearings, yes.
Okay, so I was under the misimpression that today was actually appeal day.
No.
It's not.
It's not.
Okay,
no.
So this is now going to be a hearing with a hearing officer.
And now, and part of the reason, a benefit to the involved retirees is you'll be able to have more flexibility in scheduling your hearings because they'll be individually scheduled as opposed to everybody have to come here on a certain day to present everything to the board. So,
okay.
But you'll get notice with regards to scheduling and everything.
Right, but part of it sounds like what it was is what kind of evidence would be allowable with this hearing, not evidence, but information.
Can you meet the microphone introducing himself?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Good. Thank you, Gabe.
That's good. Sorry about that. Yeah. Eric Johnson, retired hazardous materials specialist for Contra Costa County. So it seemed that the first letter I got after I spoke at February meeting here, the first letter I got after that said what kind of information we could bring, and it seemed more related to timesheets. And I remember asking you specifically after the last meeting, our argument was more that it shouldn't be able to be retroactively applied. So I guess I'm wondering what kind of information is going to be allowed at the hearing. I mean, are we just going to get a notice saying, again, that it's, okay, you can bring timesheet information, say, to, if you want to claim this was not, shouldn't have been categorized as callback pay or something. But I think in my case and many of the HAZMAT people, the case is more the retroactive application of it and the promises that that category was going to be allowed, that sort of thing. So,
that, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen or Harvey, but that's not going to be the focus. The latter is not going to be the focus of the hearing. The focus of the hearing is going to be the category and the appropriateness of proof of which hours fit into which category, or the hours.
So again, it is more of a timesheet issue that my only argument would be to say that this pay was miscategorized. It should not have been categorized as callback pay because, so I guess what I'm hearing is that it's already been determined that callback pay will be taken back. Retirement pay based on callback pay will be rescinded. Is that right?
We've made no such determination yet.
Yeah, so again, that's kind of my argument. I don't have a timesheet argument. I mean, the amount that's being argued to be taken back from me is pay for when I was called back to work. And my argument is not that it was miscategorized. It was categorized properly. It was callback pay. We had two categories in that instance. One would have been overtime, which we always understood didn't count, and that's when a daytime shift rolled in, an incident rolled through your shift. That was never allowed. But what had always been promised by our employer and the retirement board was that callback pay counted. So again, my argument's not, oh, it should have been categorized as something else. The argument is, it was promised, how can you take it back once we've retired?
Yeah, I don't want to prejudge your matter, and I think you might want to await receipt of the notice that'll provide specific direction for the date, time, place of the hearing and the scope of the hearing. My quick summary is that I heard a mix of law and fact argument in what you just said, so that may be how your case ultimately shakes out. I don't know, but I would encourage you to go through the process and present the evidence that you have in accordance with the hearing notice.
And I think the additional information with regards to each individual's particular issue, there'll be some information in the hearing notice as far as what the hearing will really be about and focus on. So it's like the doctor's issue is a different issue than the hazmat's issue. Right. So.
Well, other than, again, the retroactive aspect of
that's,
it.
But. And that's the legal thing which isn't going to be dealt with in the fact-finding hearing.
That won't be.
Right. Will not be.
And how do we deal with that part?
That is back when the recommendation comes back to this board and we decide what to do with the recommendation as far as.
Okay, so I had heard also maybe one recommendation that we would, I'm really not trying to drag this meeting out, that we would also bring representation. So where would that be appropriate? Here? Or, again, if I don't have the evidence that's being sought in my formal appeal or before a hearing officer.
If you hire an attorney, you can take the attorney to the fact-finding hearing. You can also bring the attorney to when the board deals with the issue from the fact finder.
Okay, but that couldn't, again, the fact finding. Well,
again, you got.
I'll wait for the notice, I guess, is what I'm hearing. Okay, so
and legal issues are going to be dealt with here. The fact finding issues are going to be dealt with in the hearing.
Okay. So it's not a done deal yet, then.
No.
All right. I thought you were arguing at that point.
Oh, no.
All right.
maybe, Mr. Chairman, it may be helpful if we kind of lay out what it would look like.
Okay.
So in front of the hearing officer, you and others, the hearing officer would take testimony, documents, whatever you can present, whatever anybody wishes to present. Did you put in the time? Did you get paid for it? What was the nature of the time? Was it required of you, or did you volunteer for it? Did everybody in the same grade and class that you're in at the time serve in the same capacity, the same type? In other words, all those facts, what happened? That'll go before the hearing officer. The hearing officer will look at all whatever's presented to that person and write up a report to the board. And they'll say, Mr. Johnson put in this much time. He did it. He wasn't required. He was called back. It was sporadic. It was done on, you know, not everybody in the same group did it, or everybody in the same group did it. Whatever the hearing officer finds, he'll say, that's what I find in your situation. And he'll do that for everybody, all 18 people who are in this situation.
Right. So
that will come back to this board.
Right.
And the board will say, okay, we will now take those facts and we will say, under the those circumstances, in your situation, the law being what it is, we believe that this should not have counted. Or that it should have counted,
right.
Whichever way. These facts put you on this side of the law or that side of the law. We're applying that, and the board therefore concludes that going forward with your benefit, we need to adjust it or not adjust it. And then at some point, the board will decide based on that, what do we do with past benefits, if anything, that you were paid? That will be done here at the board.
Okay. So if part of my argument is that, yes, it was required, I should be making my best case for that at that hearing.
At the hearing, because that's a matter of fact. What's the nature of the work that you got paid for? Was it mandatory? Was it voluntary? Did you actually serve it? Did you have to serve it? All those facts, that's the venue for that.
Okay.
And then that will come back to this board, and the board will say, oh, okay, I see Mr. Johnson had these facts. It falls on this side or that side of pensionability.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does. You got a good attorney you can recommend? Or
we already have them.
I just got a question. Are they given one hearing, or let's say the hearing officer says, when do you want information? Do they mail it in? Do they schedule a second hearing?
It'll all be, you know, however the hearing officer wants to administer it. Could be less formal, more formal, you know. Could be done five at a time in an afternoon. Could be, you know, 18 done serially.
Okay.
Could be all sent in by email, you know, whatever is fair.
Lacey Friedman with Hazardous Materials. I just have a question. Normally in an OAH hearing, there's two sides of the table sitting there and they ask questions at each other,
sure.
Similar to a courtroom. Yeah. Is there another side to the table that will be asking questions?
The system, the retirement system, SACERA.
So somebody from here?
It won't be someone from here.
There.
It would
there.
Be
yeah.
a representative
there.
Who would be appearing on behalf of the system.
It won't be a board member.
It won't be a board member.
It
won't
be
an attorney.
It
will
be
you?
An attorney. No, it won't be me because I'm advising the board.
Well, and you're representing me apparently.
Yeah, well, and I got that.
So Sarah's going to hire another attorney to sit on the other side of the table?
Yes.
Yes, we're going to have to.
There will be
that's
another
kind
attorney.
Of the opposing.
Yes.
Oh. All right. Thank you.
We're not opposing.
Yeah, that was the word. That
yeah, it's to sit on the other side of the table to present facts or to ask questions to bring out all the facts.
It's more information.
It's not.
Okay.
I mean,
it's usually opposing and.
No, but that's typical. The same thing in disability hearings. The same thing happens. And in fact, the county is a party to the proceeding too. And the county may wish to appear.
That's what I was wondering. Maybe the county and the employee, or is it the employee?
It's a y'all come.
Yeah.
Jack? Who will select the hearing officer?
We will.
That's pretty random. You go to the OAH, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and they will assign somebody.
When you say you.
Oh, the system does. No, the board, because the board's paying for the process, has to contract with OAH to to get them to assign a hearing officer. So it's a random wheel that they pick from.
We're not going to request anybody. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah. We wouldn't know anybody to request.
No. So my guess is Karen would be the one that would go and request.
Probably not.
Yes, the system will, yes.
Yeah. Request, yeah.
You representing the system.
Make a request out of the Office of Administrative Hearings for a...
We will initiate the process, right?
Right.
And OAH will select the proposed hearing officer or hearing officers, and unless there are disclosures that require recusal or conflict, they'll pick a hearing officer and we'll have a hearing, right?
Exactly.
That's it.
And that office is a county office?
State.
State office.
Out of Oakland.
Okay. It's a state office that contracts with all public agencies for fact-finding purposes.
Okay, so there's a motion on the table with regards to basically putting this hearing system into place, or adopting this.
No, this is the motion, Gordon. Now.
Oh, did? We did vote on that?
Yes, Deborah said
we did vote on that. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
I didn't even remember.
Better than we thought.
Is there any other issues with regards to this issue that we need to deal with?
Nope.
Nope? Okay.
No.
Moving on, item 11, con-